Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here, live from the Kintec Studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at DunbarLumber.com. We'll get to the whiteboard in just a second here, but I had to read this text that came in from BL, who says, next time you guys have Rick on, can you draft banana sizes? Well, we know Rick's taking small bananas first overall. First off the board for Rick. Although I'm not clear, does he prefer them or is it just all he can find?
I think small to mid-size.
But is it a preference or is it like they're out of the normal bananas. I guess I'll have to take the small ones. I can't really tell with Rick. But anyways, I feel like he's taking small bananas first overall in a banana size draft. Anyways, if you got more comments that delight me like that, 650-650, the Dunbar Lumber text line is the place to send him. And I forgot to tease that we were doing the whiteboard before, but of course, because we did the crossover in the first segment, we saved the whiteboard for right now in the final segment. Let's get into it.
All right, now, fellas, hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, October 24th, and not a ton of headlines right now. Of course, we've got already had a day after their last game. They don't play again until Saturday, day off for the team, but pretty clearly the headline around the team over the last 24 hours or so, the testy exchange, I believe, as Jeff Patterson put it on Twitter, between JT Miller and Elias Pettersson at practice yesterday. And, you know, Pettersson was asked about it and basically said, yeah, it's good to practice with edge. Rick Tocchet was asked about it, said, hey, that's something that happens. You don't want to see like punches being thrown. And by the descriptions we're getting, it doesn't sound like that was the case between JT Miller and Elias Pettersson. But sometimes guys have to go at each other a little bit in practice. Usually it's not a big deal long term. You can obviously point to recent examples in Canucks history. The Garland and Joshua one comes to mind, where they get into it early in the season last year. It might have even been preseason, actually.
Yeah, it was training camp.
Yeah, training camp, where they're getting into it. And then they go on to form this incredible partnership and have extremely productive seasons playing together. Become off-ice friends as well in the case of Connor Garland and Dakota Joshua. So it's not... it's not something that has to be cause for alarm, cause for major concern or anything, but I think it's just realistically, when it's these two players, when it's your two highest paid forwards, your two forwards expected to be the best forwards on your team, and one of them is very publicly struggling to produce right now, struggling to get his game, trying to live up to a new contract, it's always going to be something. It's going to be a thing that is noticed and talked about, even if it doesn't go beyond, hey, they got into it at practice a little bit yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah. And I look, it's something that, you know, it does happen. It's often a sign of intensity on both mm-hmm. sides. I think you like to see that heat and that intensity. But, you know, I mean, like, these are two players who have talked at length, for example, on record previously about their relationship, and that sort of amps it up, as does the fact that these are the team's two most important forwards. Yep. So obviously it's going to be noticed and discussed. Whether it matters or not remains to be seen. That's something we'll have a better sense of in like months as opposed to right now.
Well, and even then we might not, right?
Yeah,
like, I mean, it's
true,
because there's going to be so much after the fact, you know, mapping a story onto this, right? Depending on, like, if Pettersson scores on Saturday, oh, wow, JT Miller lit a fire in his belly going after him at practice. Like, I don't know, Pettersson's had some good scoring chances.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, right? Like, I think all of this is being interpreted through the lens of the discussion around Pettersson right now, right? And
yep,
that discussion, I think, is becoming increasingly claustrophobic, especially because, you know, it is my view that what we're seeing right now is materially different than what we saw in the playoffs last year and down the stretch. You know, I think that line has been really good. I think Pettersson has had some high-end moments, you know, even producing with that line. That pass in Philly was a sensational piece of work. And so, you know, I don't think overfitting a narrative if he produces, overfitting a narrative if he doesn't, really makes sense. As far as I'm concerned, it's just, you know, two competitive guys getting into it.
Yep.
You know, you probably like to see it, frankly, if you're the team.
Yeah, and again, I know Rick made the point earlier in the show, like, oh, a little surprising because they've won three games in a row, but I think even that you can spin as a positive, right? You know, if you want, like, hey, they're not satisfied. Yeah, they beat Chicago and they beat Philly, but they want to get better. They still are bringing those practice habits and that intensity that Rick Tocchet wants to see. So, again, it is the headline of the last 24 hours. I don't want to downplay it, right? It's of note, but it doesn't have to be, I would be surprised if it's something we're still talking about next week, for example.
Yeah, and it exists in this space where it's like, it's nothing, negative Vancouver media making something out of nothing. It's like, well, it's not nothing. You know, it's a fair thing to note and talk about, which doesn't mean that it's also like a huge deal or a bad sign or a sign of like, you know, a negative outcome that's like on the precipice either way.
It's a really good 3 days in between games story. It's a great story for when you have 3 days in between games.
It is, except the stories I like are the ones where you should have a good take on. And this is one.
And this
where,
one is just like noted. It happened.
Yeah,
I thought we did. We talked about it for like 15 minutes with Donnie and Dolly, and somehow I thought it was like a good conversation about it for 15 minutes with no one making an idiot of themselves, which is tough to do when you're trying to like talk about it, but also say it's not a big deal.
And tough to do when it's a segment with both Rick and I.
So anyways, there you go. There's your headline. The testy exchange between Elias Pettersson and JT Miller. And of course, as I mentioned, day off for the team today. They practiced yesterday. You imagine they'll practice again tomorrow. And then they take on Sidney Crosby and the Pittsburgh Penguins. Start of a 3-game homestand, I believe, next week. So it's Penguins on Saturday, the Hurricanes on Monday the 28th, and then the New Jersey Devils on the 30th. So three pretty good. Well, we'll see about the Penguins. They've had some wild swings already in the early going. But
I think the Penguins are at least competent.
Yeah, they're not. I don't think they're going to be a bottom feeder. Remains to be seen if they're like really good, but I don't think they're going to be a bottom feeder.
I mean, would they rank as the third most challenging opponent Vancouver has faced or the second?
After Tampa?
Well, Tampa would be one.
Yeah.
Because Florida didn't have Barkov and Kachuk, so like your mileage may vary, but I'd say you can debate either way. Like they're somewhere between Florida and they're somewhere between Florida and Philly.
Yeah. And then obviously New Jersey and Carolina will be good tests for the team as well when they roll into town next week. Broadsheet time, and I referenced this audio earlier in the show, but of course Daily Faceoff NHL insider Frank Saravalli, now again a regular contributor here on Sportsnet 650. He was on with Halford and Brough this morning, and you know, Rick, I think he was on in Calgary yesterday talking about the Thatcher Demko injury, the return from injury, all of that, and the guys on Halford and Brough asked him for some more information on that. Here's what Frank had to say.
I don't know that there's a ready-made fix for this. And I think that's actually really kind of at the root of it, is it seems like basically what, at least this is how it's been relayed to me, it seems like at the root of this, Thatcher Demko is basically trying to deal with a new reality of what that knee feels like. And I don't know that how much better it's going to get in the short term as he continues to work away at it. It might ultimately just be getting to a place where he says, okay, I understand what this is like. I understand how this is impacting me, and I'm going to have to find a way to get comfortable moving forward.
That's Frank Saravalli on Halford and Brough earlier this morning. You can check out the whole hit on Sportsnet's sportsnet.ca/650. And, you know, again, it's, and as Rick Dhaliwal said earlier when he was on with us for the crossover, it's this issue of Demko not being able, like having some good days, but then not being able necessarily to take it to the next level, right? Not being able to start that ramping up process that would be able to give them a timeline for his return. And, you know, it's the kind of thing where you want to be very cautious about how you're thinking about it and all of that, but there has to be some pretty significant cause for concern here when you start to hear, right, like that he's not able to, because I think even back to training camp, and Rick Tocchet was saying, you know, hey, Thatcher Demko, he's been having a bunch of good days here, right? Like he's had a good week here. It doesn't seem like that's translated into linear progress, and that's got to be frustrating for the team, for Thatcher Demko certainly, and I think obviously the longer this goes without that ability to ramp, to start ramping up, then the concern level has to increase as well for the fans.
Well, for sure. And then there's the question of what comes afterwards, right? Like the you know, the re-injury risk side of this, the amount of workload that he could responsibly hold down, or be expected to hold down. The question of, like, what does it look like for, like, what does it look like in terms of how often he can play, right? And how much do you need to see of that over the course of the season to feel comfortable if you go on a deep playoff run that he can do it every night? You know what I mean? Like, and certainly the re-injury side of this, the performance impact side of this, right? Like, most injuries, we talked about this a lot over the last 2 years with Ilya Mikheyev coming off the ACL, right? The idea that an ACL injury might carry performance impact for as much as 12 to 18 months for a player was something we noted at length, something we debated at length. And, you know, with an injury that no hockey player has ever had, you know, it's not like we have a template here. It's not like we have any ability to understand or project with any confidence whether or not that'll be a side of this too. So the uncertainty around Demko is massive. It applies to timelines. It applies to performance impact on his return. It applies to re-injury risk. And then, you know, I do think there's an additional angle here that we have to be mindful of, which is that, you know, a playoff goaltender has to play every night. Like, you know, if he comes back but has to be in only a certain amount of time, or can only, you know, it's two games a week or something, like, is that enough for the Canucks to feel comfortable with their options heading into a playoff run that they'll enter with significant ambition? We'll cross that bridge when we come to it. I think in the meantime, we just want to see Demko back. We just want to sort of, you know, forget hearing progress. We just want to see this guy get back because, I mean, it sucks for a super competitive guy to be on the shelf like this for this long. Now, for our audience, I've been ragging the puck, but it doesn't look like there's any actual end in sight because Jamie's
You can tell. At this point, you can just tell everyone what's going on, which is my mic is busted.
Yeah, no, I was going to, like, hopefully get you to a point where you were ready to go. But yeah, Jamie's mic is down, and so I will finish the whiteboard. Jamie, tell me where we were at, even though you're not on the mic.
That was the broadsheet.
So that was the broadsheet right there. Oh, so let's go to lineup notes.
Am I back?
Notes. Yeah.
I'm back.
Lineup notes.
Crack producer Lena getting in here and fixing us up here. So I am back. That was some good ragging the puck, though.
Thank you. Canucks lone, Eric Brandstrom and Arshdeep Baines down to the American League. Now, Baines is on a two-way deal, so this actually hits him in the pocketbook on the exact...
That's tough.
Well, it is, but you know what? I wonder, because this club has done this before... I wonder, like, we know, I think, with some reasonable degree of confidence that Baines's next deal is a one-way deal, and it's a two-year one-way deal with this club. Like, we know that they have this sort of built-in pathway that they've forged with their players. You know, you do the two-year deal, like, a la Hoglander, and also some guys who haven't actually made it to the next level, like Rathbone. Shelov's got the two-year deal and you know, hasn't been able to hold down sort of the starter's role. Pod Colson signed the two-year deal and got traded before he played a game under the contract. But the club does this with, like, guys who are on the fringes of the NHL level but have done their who the club wants to bet on effectively. And if it works out for you, you might get extended early a la Nils Hoglander, who's sort of like the template for what it looks like when it works. Anyway, I wonder if Baines is going to yo-yo in a way that hits him in the pocketbook. I actually wonder if that causes the club to do a deal early, like to do his next deal a little bit early so that you've taken care of the player despite the fact that on occasion, as the club manages their cap and as they look to accumulate as much cap space as they can outside of LTI, you know, and this move will massively enhance what they're accumulating today, like by a factor of five.
Yep.
So, by the way, I would...
And you're right, Baines is eligible for an extension because this is his last year as an RFA. So, theoretically, they could do it at any point.
Not me reporting anything, just like a Spidey senses thing. They did it with Nils Åman for waiver exemption reasons. Like, the moment he became waiver eligible, they tried to dissuade teams from claiming him by making his contract a more sizable commitment. I wonder if we could see something similar with Baines, sort of a manage the relationship while you're also hitting a guy in the pocketbook on a regular basis during home games. I'd expect both players to be back, but certainly Brandstrom to be back. And You know, we'll sort of see. This is a cap move. This isn't a classic reassignment. I don't read much into this in terms of like Forbert and Dakota Joshua being options for the team on Saturday.
Yeah, this is part of the tolling process, right? So you can send these guys down. You can paper them down. You have more daily cap space. That increases the cap space that you're accruing. Eventually, that adds up as you get closer to the trade
deadline.
Yeah,
not a paper move though. Like they'll have to report.
Yep.
So, you know, papering's the not to like be cement.
Say paper?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's not really what I meant, anyways.
It's all good. I'm just saying that these aren't paper transactions. This is just that the players will be back.
Yeah.
For Saturday, certainly Brännström will. Maybe I'm curious to see if we actually see Ratu again, just because JT Miller hasn't been taking draws, and the Canucks are going to need somebody. I think for some defensive zone draws, that's some value that Ratu might provide. So we'll see if Baines comes back, but I do expect Brännström to be back and be in the lineup on Sunday. Or Saturday, excuse me.
The other note, of course, is that Derek Forbort, per Rick Dhaliwal, is set to rejoin the team. Of course, he's missed the last three games. Great news, of course, was away from the team for personal reasons. So we'll see. You know, you expect him to be on the ice when the team practices. But as you said, having missed that time, probably not an option for Saturday. Look to see him get in at some point on the homestand, however, and then that will create some interesting decisions to be made on the blue line. And the other place where they're going to have some interesting decisions, now we're not quite there certainly for Saturday, right? But you know, potentially as soon as that game on Wednesday against the Devils, right? Dakota Joshua, and that's going to prompt some interesting decisions. Somebody maybe getting reassigned on a more permanent basis to Abbotsford, somebody coming out of the lineup, somebody going down to the fourth line, all of those things. That's going to be something to watch as well as Dakota Joshua's return gets closer here. Okay, as we continue to go through the whiteboard for today, we can do a quick check-in on the Athletics playoff odds here for the Vancouver Canucks. And of course, they've been very, very strong all season, still at 95%. And both them and the Oilers projected to finish with 106 points. So neck and neck at the top of the Pacific Division. As we talk about the Pacific Division, right, the next team in this projection is the Golden Knights at 96 points. It's very early. They've only played 7 games. They have 9 points in those 7 games. So the record is good. +8 goal differential. Their underlying numbers, I know, have caught some people by surprise as being pretty weak in the early going. Is there, like, do you buy into that at all, or is that pure 7-game sample size stuff?
Well, and they've led too much.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, they've led in, 6 of their 9 games for, like, most of the game. So, guess what happens when you lead a lot
and
the sample
is small? Starts to pile up a lot of shots. Yeah.
So, I wouldn't read anything into that at this juncture.
What about Boston's bad numbers? I mean, this isn't relevant to the Canucks exactly, but I know you're always there waiting for the Boston downfall. And they've got some ugly underlying numbers, too.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, again, too early.
You're not ready to go there just yet?
Well, because they haven't led with the same frequency that Vegas has. So, might be more there. Maybe this is the year. Maybe this is the year, but I don't know. Boston Bruins, Black Magic. Like, their fourth line is the highest scoring line in the league. Like, I don't know. I still see enough Bruins Black Magic that I'm not exactly, dancing on that particular resting place.
Anything you want to touch on for the for some betting updates for us?
No.
How did the Keither Sherwood ladder go?
He hit 3.
There you go.
So the low rung hit. So I think we're back in the black, which is nice.
That's right.
And I think I'm just going to keep riding that one. Like, he easily could have shot on that first goal.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And there were, his attempts rate is just through the roof. That third line's playing well, and they're playing against sort of secondary comp. And Keefer Sherwood's got a 5-on-5 shot rate, in the double digits. He's got one of the highest shot rates in hockey right now. So while that persists and while that line remains in place, just expect every game for me to be hammering that until the books adjust.
Speaking of the Golden Knights, a little bit of breaking news here that also concerns local player Shea Theodore. He signs a 7-year, $7.425 million extension with the Vegas Golden Knights. Of course, Shea Theodore was going to be a UFA at the end of the year. And I will admit, I'd even let myself think, Vegas, they're sometimes pretty aggressive. Sometimes they make a trade out of nowhere that you didn't see coming? Could Shea Theodore find himself on the block at some point this year as a pending UFA? Nope. He is signing a big, big deal to stay in Vegas. A total value of just shy of $52 million. And Shea Theodore, I mean, just a fantastic player.
Flat out.
Congratulations to him. And also, as I said, local out of Langley, I believe, or Aldergrove. So congratulations to Shea Theodore.
A flat out elite defenseman when he's healthy.
Yeah.
Like, just not much else to it. He is an incredible, incredible offensive defenseman.
He's got to be on Canada's team for the Four Nations, right?
Yeah, I would think so.
I would think so as well.
Although, you know, he is best on his offside, and Canada might be weird about that. You know, like Canada has been in the past. So, you know, and then I haven't really thought that much about the blue line, but I just assume Makar Taves top pair, right?
Probably, yeah. I think that's pretty easy.
And then. Yeah, I mean, I think Theodore is at least on a short list of players you'd expect to be included.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And yeah, always nice to see a local BC guy get the bag like Shea Theodore does with the Vegas Golden Knights. And yeah, as I said, if you were dreaming of Shea Theodore becoming available, as you say, can play his offside, better on his offside, being a right shot pickup available for the Canucks at some point, that dream is over as he signs the 7-year extension to stay with the Vegas Golden Knights.
Defense market, man.
It's tough.
Might be crunchy.
It is tough. I was looking out there, like, we've all done the Rasmus Anderson speculation, right? He's off to a really good start with Calgary. He's also just a really good player. He's got the extra year on his deal as well, so that drives up the price. Well,
if that team's in the mix, yeah, they're not selling.
And you start to think about, you start to go through the other, like, potential UFA, like, pending UFA right shot D-man targets, and there's not a lot of guys that are going to get you super, super excited necessarily. So it might have to be something a little bit more creative, a little bit more out of left field, a guy who already has terms, something like that, maybe even like a rehab project type of thing. But as we said, they make these deals in October and November. I would certainly expect them to be looking around and trying to find something on the blue line right now as well. All right. Thank you to everyone for texting in. Thank you to Rick and Don for coming on for the crossover, for accommodating Drancer, doing it on a Thursday. Big Friday show tomorrow, of course. Dimitri will join us, and we will set up the Canucks and the Penguins at Rogers Arena on Saturday. Have a great one. We're back tomorrow. More Canucks talk on Sportsnet 650.